In 1933, a boy was born in Forest, Mississippi, who would change medical history, though no one knew it yet. Donald Triplett sang Christmas carols perfectly at 15 months, could unlatch windows with remarkable cleverness, yet seemed utterly disconnected from the world around him. He developed elaborate rituals that, when interrupted, triggered screaming fits. His parents were baffled. Doctors were stumped. And so, following expert advice, they did what seemed necessary. They institutionalized their 3-year-old son at a place called the Preventorium, where his vibrant spirit withered into silence. This wasn't cruelty. It was standard medical practice in an era when children like Donald were labeled idiots, imbeciles, or simply defective. Even the beloved Dr. Spock recommended institutionalizing disabled babies immediately to spare families from being too wrapped up in children who would never develop very far. But Donald's story didn't end there. It began a revolution that would eventually touch millions of lives and redefine what it means to be human. What if autism has always been with us, woven into the fabric of human experience, simply waiting to be recognized? Long before Leo Kanner borrowed the term autism from psychiatric literature in 1943, individuals matching this profile appeared throughout history, though they were called by different names. In 16th century Russia, holy fools like Basil walked naked through winter, spoke incomprehensibly, and showed indifference to physical discomfort. Rather than being shunned, Basil was revered as holy, respected even by the feared Tsar Ivan the Terrible. In 1740 Scotland, Hugh Blair obsessively collected twigs and feathers, wore his wigs backward, and showed more interest in animals than people, behaviors documented in legal proceedings when his brother sought to annul Hugh's marriage. In 1800, a nearly naked 12-year-old emerged from a French forest, displaying remarkable physical abilities, yet extreme selectivity in hearing, deaf to pistol shots, but instantly reacting to a nut being cracked in another room. These weren't isolated cases, but patterns repeating across centuries and continents, suggesting autism has always been part of human diversity, simply unnamed and unmisunderstood until our modern age gave it language. When Rita Tepper's 2-year-old son Stephen was diagnosed with autism in 1966, Bellevue Hospital required her to undergo treatment. Psychiatrists believed mothers caused autism. In group therapy, desperate women searched their memories for moments they might have traumatized their babies. Rita confessed that when Stephen was born jaundiced, she thought he looked like a chicken. This devastating guilt was systematically inflicted on thousands of mothers through the refrigerator mother theory, championed by Bruno Bettelheim, a former Austrian lumber merchant with only a doctorate in art history who became America's most trusted child psychology authority. He compared autistic children to concentration camp prisoners and mothers to Nazi guards. Some parents refused silence. Bernard Rimland discovered autism while desperately searching psychology textbooks to understand his son Mark. What he found, a theory blaming his wife Gloria, enraged him. Analyzing every published autism case, about 230, Rimland systematically demolished the refrigerator mother theory. Most mothers with autistic children also had neurotypical children. Psychotherapy failed to cure autism. No pattern of traumatic events existed. His 1964 book became a lifeline for guilt-ridden parents. Ruth Sullivan, a former Army nurse with 7 children but only 1 with autism, had living proof the theory was wrong. When Sullivan and Rimland connected through a chance TV appearance, they formed the National Society for Autistic Children on November 14, 1965. Between 30 and 60 parents gathered in a New Jersey home. For the first time, Ruth said, "We had hope." In 1971, Alec Gibson shot his 13-year-old autistic son, Dougie, after years of institutional rejection and financial ruin. Though he received a life sentence, this tragedy sparked change. State education officials suddenly engaged with autism families, securing a $200,000 federal grant. But Dougie's story was one visible tragedy among thousands of invisible ones. Archie Casto was committed to Huntington State Hospital at age 5 in 1918 after a doctor pronounced him insane. His entire universe became two or three locked wardrooms shared with dozens of others. No letters, friends, or photographs survived beyond census records. His smile disappeared, replaced by what his sister called his stony look of pure hopelessness. The breakthrough came in 1971, when attorney Tom Gilhool, whose own brother had been institutionalized at Pennhurst since 1953, sued Pennsylvania. After presenting four expert witnesses who testified that all children could learn, the state's attorney announced, "Your honors, we surrender." By 1973, about 30 federal court decisions had affirmed these principles nationwide. This legal revolution opened school doors previously locked to autistic children, fundamentally shifting societal expectations from warehousing to educating, from hopelessness to possibility. While American researchers sought cures, British scientists focused on understanding autism itself. At a London brick house, Neil O'Connor and Biad Hermelin discovered many autistic children relied more on touch than sight or hearing, producing concrete neurological evidence that autism was brain-based, not parenting-based. In 1984, Yuda Frith and Simon Baron Cohen created the Sally Ann test using two dolls and a marble. While neurotypical children understood Sally would look where she left her marble, 85% of autistic children pointed to where it actually was, revealing difficulty taking another's perspective. This theory of mind deficit transformed understanding of autism's cognitive profile. Then, Lorna Wing, both psychiatrist and mother of a severely autistic daughter, revolutionized the field by introducing the autism spectrum. Her research with 900 teachers and 132 children revealed autistic traits appeared in countless combinations. This shift from continuum to spectrum encouraged recognition of autism's complex dimensionality, with profound scientific, social, and political repercussions continuing today. For decades, Temple Grandin stood virtually alone as someone who could articulate autism from the inside. By the mid-2000s, thousands joined through platforms like Wrong Planet, where online interaction removed the pressure of eye contact and nonverbal cues. By 2010, the CDC reported almost half the diagnosed autism population hit the upper intelligence ranges, a demographic shift that fundamentally altered autism politics. In July 1993, Jim Sinclair challenged parents directly. When parents say, "I wish my child did not have autism," what they're really saying is, "I wish the autistic child I have did not exist." Australian sociologist Judy Singer coined the term neurodiversity, asserting autism was simply one more way of being human. In 2006, Ari Neiman founded the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network with the motto, "Nothing about us, without us." When NYU's 2007 Ransom Notes campaign featured mock kidnapper letters about autism, the movement defeated it within 18 days. As Temple Grandin told Oliver Sacks, "If I could snap my fingers and be non-autistic, I would not. Autism is part of what I am." This was a radical reframing of difference as diversity rather than deficiency. Donald Triplett celebrated his 80th birthday in Forest, Mississippi in 2013, surrounded by lifelong friends. He worked at the family bank, played golf, traveled alone to 36 countries, and discovered texting in his 70s, unlocking unprecedented communication abilities. Donald's exceptional life stemmed from wealth, community acceptance, and unconditional family support. His story is autism's first chapter, but it cannot be its only one. Most adults with autism face bleak prospects. Over half have never held paid jobs, 80% of severely affected individuals still live with aging parents, and critical support often disappears at age 21. Yet, innovative approaches are emerging. Companies employing autistic adults as software testers, foster family housing models replacing group homes, and communities forming protective networks. On a New Jersey bus, when bullies harassed an autistic passenger, a regular rider intervened. What's his problem? He's got autism. So what's your problem? This spontaneous defense shows how neighbors can decide the odd man out is one of us. From Donald Triplett's 1943 diagnosis to today's neurodiversity movement, we've evolved from institutionalization to education, from blame to understanding, from silence to self-advocacy. This revolution redefines normal to embrace the full spectrum of human experience, viewing difference as diversity rather than deficiency. Each generation contributed. Parents who refused blame, scientists who sought understanding, lawyers who fought for rights, and most crucially, autistic individuals who claimed their voices and demanded recognition. The autism story expands humanity's circle of empathy, teaching us to value differently wired minds and build a world where everyone can thrive as their authentic self.